What I'd like you to do now is to sound off, simply sound off, and then, of course, follow it up with a question with Catherine Austin Fitz, who's staying with us this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're going to take your sound off calls and your questions. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, this should be one of the fascinating moments, huh?
Absolutely.
Letting Americans or Canadians sound off. How does this affect? We get a lot of calls from Canada. We're on many stations there. How does what's happening to us affect them? Does it?
Yes, absolutely. The what we're watching, we just watched the contagion this week spread to Europe, and it's going to reverberate back to Canada and all the major countries around the world. This is a global financial issue. It's not domestic to the U.S. at all.
Let's go to you, Jim, in Arkansas. Sound off and then a question. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I just want to sound off to the fact that I am just so disappointed, irritated, and mad at the fact that we have no common sense in politics. You know, it's a basic instinct that we have to look at something and understand, well, do I want to be stupid or do I want to be smart? I mean, that's common sense, basically. And it just annoys me that we can't find a politician. I mean, the only one that I found in this election didn't get far enough in it, and that'd be Ron Paul.
You're right. You're absolutely right. How about a question for Catherine Austin Fitz?
Well, my question would be what she thinks of this idea. And instead of bailing out these big guys, is there not some way that we can kind of reverse what Reagan did and put the money at the bottom and let it work up?
Yes, absolutely.
That's going to help everybody.
There are several things you're going to need to do to make that possible. One is you do, as we discussed in the last hour, you do need to move control issuance of the currency and the Federal Reserve responsibilities, the New York Fed Reserve responsibilities, back to Treasury under the control of a sovereign government. So that's one. The second thing you need is you need place-based financial reporting. So the average citizen needs to be able to see an annual financial statement showing the sources and uses of all federal government resources in their place. You also need the ability of local areas to issue their own currency. We need the ability not just to have a national or international currencies, but the ability to do our own in a place. And then finally, we need the ability to circulate equity locally to small business. Right now, it's much easier for a person in America to make to buy a lottery ticket than it is to invest in the local businesses in their place. So there's a whole series of economic reforms that are needed, but absolutely, that's what we need to do. The number one mechanism to centralize power and money in our society is corruption. And you're not going to be able to deal that with that unless you bring the economy back to the root in a way that is very transparent and accountable to people who are watching it every day in their lives.
Let's go to David in Ohio. Sound off on a question, David.
Yes, sir. After listening to you guys, I am mad as hell about that Federal Reserve Bank in New York. That seems to be the damn dirtiest thing I've ever heard. My question was, does it make sense to put a moratorium on interest rates to homeowners and business to where they could double up on house payments and put money in a system that way?
Interesting.
Yeah, there are things that could be done with interest rates. Right now what we're watching is the interest rates being managed so that financial institutions can literally print profits. And part of the thing that has the economy so out of balance is that profit machinery is available to the insiders, and it, you know, ultimately comes around in higher gas and food and other expenses to hurt the outsiders. So there are things that can be done with interest rates. Right now, we're on a deflationary track, and interest rates are coming down, and that's going to provide some relief to homeowners and borrowers. It's going to hit senior citizens very hard who depend on, that yield for their income. So it's good for some and tough on others.
Let's go to first-time caller Gary, Los Angeles. Go ahead, Gary. Sound off.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good.
My question goes to Catherine here on this one. And Yeah, well, it's kind of two-part, if I might put it that way. What I see is this. Initially, the Community Reinvestment Act created the problem that we're now seeing in the mortgage market, and that was passed by Congress. And then, on top of that, we were dealing with something else. And I look at it this way. The banks were forced to go ahead and deal with this, and they were forced to go ahead and make these loans in the first place. But now the banks are coming back and saying, hey, look, Congress, you forced us to do this. Now you're putting us in a position to where we can no longer afford it. And now, at the same time, the service corporations such as Countrywide and those others that were involved in this same situation, Citibank and what have you, are sitting out there holding us as the homeowners, et cetera, accountable for their bad choices in the bad congressional, so to speak, if I'm going to put it this way, the law that would that Congress put up against us, and they're now, the Senate is now saying, okay, we have to do this because we forced the banks into the position, and now the banks are coming back upon us to how do I want to put this, to make this right.
Well, the in my experience, the Community Reinvestment Act, CRA, was nowhere as much a problem as a combination of a couple other things. One is the combination of the FHA origination goals combined with the Freddie and Fannie affordable housing goals. And it's a perfect example of forcing government to do something to, quote, fix a problem when, in fact, what you need is for government to stop doing something else. So, for example, we take certain neighborhoods and flood them with drugs and the war on drugs, and then to get mortgage loans made, we pass a law called CRA when, in fact, you know, the market could handle that market perfectly if we just stopped dealing drugs and doing the war on drugs in that neighborhood. So, you know, you've got a situation where certain places are not healthy, and forcing more loans in it, whether it's the Freddie and Fannie affordable housing goals or FHA or CRA, is not the solution. You're attacking a symptom in a way that doesn't get at the root cause. So I agree with you. It wasn't helpful, but I don't think in the scheme of what is causing the mortgage losses that it was a big piece. I would say the biggest piece was a decision at the federal level, starting in the Clinton administration, to basically fraudulently induce America. Because remember, most Americans didn't realize how many jobs were going to go abroad and how much their income was going to fall. They didn't know. But the large banks and the government did know. So, you know, CRA was a tiny part of an overall, you know, literally economic warfare play that was devastating. But, you know, I agree with you. There was a lot of CRA that was unnecessary and useless because it was attacking a symptom, not the root cause.
Let's go to Bruce in Georgia. Sound off, Bruce, and then a question.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to sound off about the word treason. I've barely heard it mentioned in the last week, maybe once or twice, but Paulson and Crooks, oh, excuse me, Freudian slip, Paulson and Company, seems like if you were to do anything to weaken this country militarily or let a state secret slip, you would automatically be brought up on treason charges for weakening this country. And it seems like the economic thing, just like you're talking about an economic apocalypse, that you have weakened by your mismanagement or greed, it seems like somebody would be able to look at this from the point of, could this be considered treasonous, some of the things they've done? And I know during time of war, you can't be executed, and last I looked, I think we're at war.
Well, is there treason here? What do you think, Kevin?
I believe there is, because I believe what they're doing is they're creating a mechanism which is above the law, which will allow them to destroy the records that could show us how trillions of dollars have been illegally moved out of this country over the last 10 years, including $4 trillion missing from the federal government, you know, that had to have left on the train tracks of the New York Fed member banks. So I believe absolutely that there is treason going on, whether it's a cover-up or literally destroying the Constitution with the creation of this kind of financial mechanism.
Now, when you say $4 trillion gone, do you think it's in somebody's bank account?
Yes. Now, I'm not saying that it's in the Cayman Islands, you know, in somebody's bank account. It's all just been stolen. I think it's been used to finance operations covertly all around the world, and, you know, part of it is probably the black budget. But we, as a matter of policy, starting in fiscal 1998, George, we started to move vast amounts of money out of the country and started reporting in the federal accounts undocumentable adjustments in billions of dollars. So in fiscal 1999, HUD was missing $59 billion. The Department of Defense in the year after was missing $2.3 trillion, and the year after $1.1 trillion. And so literally the Department of Defense in 1 year had more undocumentable adjustments than the American taxpayers paid in taxes, which can happen with securities fraud, including the kind of mortgage fraud that we've been talking about. So huge amounts of money have disappeared and are not accountable, and the federal government has refused to comply with the law that requires audited financial statements. So, you know, we are turning over the power to the United States Treasury when the United States Treasury, since 1995, has refused to comply with the law that requires them to produce audited financial statements.
Okay, next up. Go ahead.
Make no mistake about it. If a publicly traded company refused to produce audited financial statements, the exchange would shut down the trading in their stock. The SEC would not allow them to issue securities, and their bank would not affect their transactions. So we're literally talking about a structural characteristic of criminal enterprise.
Chris in Zamora, California, sound off west of the Rockies.
Well, my sound off is this. You know, come April, I'm going to have to pay my taxes, and I'm not looking forward to having to pay my taxes directly to Goldman Sachs. You know, I think this is, you know, we're basically supporting a criminal enterprise. And, you know, this whole trading in derivatives and all of that, that needs to be illegal. You know, I mean, even Warren Buffett said that, you know, it was the best way to commit financial suicide. So my question is, should we even pay our taxes? And either one of the guests or you, George, can take that answer. Should we pay our taxes, or should we help wean the government away from their criminal enterprises by withholding the monies that support it?
You know, I've always wondered whether there was a legal basis, and some of it would have to do with state law, to say the federal government is out of compliance with the laws related to financial integrity. We as citizens have an obligation to make sure that the governmental purposes are funded. So we are going to create an escrow in this county or this place, and we're going to take all of our tax. We're going to pay our taxes, but the money's going to go into the escrow. And rather than sending checks for all these different things that you normally fund in the place, we're sending you a portion of this to pay the national debt, and we will, you know, we will literally do a common law right of offset and make sure these expenses get paid, because you're in violation of the law, and it would be imprudent for us to circulate the money through your mechanism. We'll just pay the cost directly here. So I think, you know, I think this is going to come up, and this is really going to come up next year, because after the election and after the inauguration, the real pain is going to start being felt, and then every American is going to have an obligation as a citizen to say, how do I make sure this money goes for governmental purposes as opposed to disappears into these non-accountable mechanisms?
What would they use $4 trillion of unaccounted money for? Black ops programs?
I think it's a combination of things. I can't imagine that it's just one thing, George. But literally what we're seeing is funding of huge projects, huge weaponry projects, and literally private armies that have soaked up a great deal of money. In addition, we've watched more and more of the economy, including state and local government, have you know, be non-economic. And what I've wondered is whether some of the money got circumvented into that as well. So I think we're looking at a system which has really serious breakdowns in financial controls and reporting. And at the federal level, we literally have a financial mechanism out of control, because the scary thing about this one, normally when you have a mechanism that is this out of control, it breaks down and you can't borrow more money. But we literally have put together something with our military might that can keep borrowing money even though it's literally out of control. And that's the scary thing, because the only way you can stop it as it keeps centralizing is to basically crash the global financial system. But given how out of control this thing is, I think a crash ultimately is the more responsible option of the two, because we've got to bring this thing back into some kind of basic alignment between the money you're printing and what has real value in the real world.
All right, next let's go to Bill in Madison, Wisconsin. Sound off, Bill, and question.
Yes. In America, the primary election system stinks. I've lived in Europe and many countries. There, all the people who want to become an office holder run in a general election there. For example, in Wisconsin, less than 10% of the eligible voters actually vote. But in the general election, some 70% vote. Now, my question to the nice lady is, do you know about that nice gentleman who was the auditor for the Defense Department who took out of there $2.3 trillion and went by the SWIFT codes of that bank that was next to the Twin Towers over to Europe, and that was pulled also, that building where those records were kept, so nobody can trace that money? What do you say, young lady? Do you know anything about that, young lady?
I've read articles, and certainly I've had serious questions about the... In Cantor Fitzgerald was the largest government securities dealer. Records were lost when Cantor Fitzgerald was destroyed during 9/11. And we've seen, we certainly had the after 9/11, the Pentagon say that they couldn't produce audited financial statements the next year because of...
No records, right?
Record destruction at the Pentagon was one of their claim, and loss of personnel. So, you know, there's a terrible... there seems to be a terrible connection with disappearing documents and terrorist events that relate
something
to something
doesn't sound right.
Right.
Something doesn't sound right on this one, Catherine.
That's right.
You don't think?
Well, it was funny. You know, my firm in the 90s was leading the HUD. We designed one of the biggest loan sale programs ever, and or distressed assets like what's going on now. And we there was a bunch of loans, George, that had huge Iran-Contra fraud. And I was really, we were about to go in and collect them and put them together for the sales in that area. And right before we could go collect them, they were out in Oklahoma in the Murray Building. The Murray Building broke up, blew up, and all those files with it. So, you know, having documentation with serious financial fraud in it has always been a dangerous thing.
You mean they had that kind of information in the Murray Federal Building?
Yeah, my guess is that there was a lot of different kinds of documents.
Huh.
And one of the things we had reported, and I've never been able to confirm, was that a lot of the documents that had fraud in them had gotten moved in and consolidated into Murray before the explosion.
Jeez. Okay, we'll be back with final phone calls in just a moment at Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Catherine Austin Fitz. And your phone calls. Catherine, thanks so much for staying the full program with us tonight.
Thank you, George. I love doing Coast to Coast.
Okay, so here's my prediction. The House, in a few days, passes this measure, though they'll appear to be reluctant, but it will squeak by. President Bush signs it into law, and there it is. Once the hoopla dies down, and the people on Wall Street realize that this truly was a sham, I think the stocks, which would have jumped 500 to 800 points when this thing becomes law or when they know it's going to become law, I think they're going to drop all over again. What do you think?
I agree. I don't know how long it will take, but I think at most we've got enough resources to buy us through the election. The problem is the price we pay is a seriously much more centralized, less stable system. And too many players see that and know that, so they're going to start shifting away. And we're going to see significant money shift out of the system.
A friend of mine was telling me about someone he knew who had a lot of money. And he got a margin call, and he doesn't have a lot of money anymore.
Right.
And it's gone, Catherine.
Right.
It's gone. His money's gone. He's trying to sell his house. He went from a high lifestyle to where he's got to, he's got to get realistic now.
Right. Right.
This country is much like that. It's gone. That lifestyle that we had as a nation, as the richest nation in the world, it's gone. We're almost a step above a third world nation now, financially.
We've had a party and liquidated our net worth over the last 10 to 15 years, but the reality is we are still very wealthy in natural resources and talent.
And military.
And military. And in theory, George, if we all stopped behaving in ways that were fundamentally not productive and started rapidly changing our behavior as a culture, there is still tremendous wealth that could be created and captured in this country.
Oh, I agree with that. John in New York, sound off, John.
How you doing, George? How you doing, Catherine?
Good.
It was up to me. I just let Wall Street rot. I mean, they got us into this, and why we have to get them out? You know, it's ridiculous. And I read somewhere last year that the CEO of Lehman Brothers made $45 million last year. I mean, that's crazy. You know?
I agree. Listen, I would send them a bill for $4 trillion. They were the depository when that money went missing. I would assert common law right of offset and start grabbing the money back. If we need money for a bailout, then I think we pull back the money that's been stolen.
So we know it went in. We just don't know where it went, right?
Right. Now, under the law, under the Constitution, you can't affect a transaction unless that transaction has been contemplated within and authorized by an appropriation. To have $4 trillion of undocumentable adjustments is just mind-boggling, and I think the depository should be held accountable.
Did this money trickle out, or did it all go at one time?
Well, that's what we need the documents to find out, which is why I'm so worried that this bailout will allow the disappearance of documents, you know, in large amount.
And Paulson does not have to answer to anyone.
Well, Paulson's a very wealthy man, and my question is, did part of that $4 trillion fund his pocket?
Well, it may be. Who knows? But doesn't this bailout give the Treasury Secretary the right to do whatever he pleases without anyone questioning it?
Yes, including pulling off the most massive obstruction of justice in the history of the country.
This is absolutely incredible. Right under our eyes.
Right.
Ray in New Mexico, first-time caller. Sound off, Ray.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Really love your show. Hey, listen, I wanted to sound off on mortgage insurance. My wife and I wanted to buy a house last year. We moved from California to New Mexico so that we could buy a house. Excuse me. And when we were talking to the realtor, we talked to him on the phone and asked him, what's the mortgage payment going to be? And he told us it would be $1,200 to $1,300 a month, and we thought, oh, we can handle that. We've done that before. We've been doing that for years. Well, when we got to his office, he goes, "Oh, I have to tell you about another $150 a month on top of that for the mortgage insurance."
Yeah, and they don't tell you about that. That's because you didn't put the 20% down. You put less, right?
We weren't going to put anything down, but we had no idea about mortgage insurance at the time. It was kind of a hard lesson. But, I don't like the idea of being asked to pay money every month that basically protects the lender, you know, because they made a lot of bad decisions.
What's your reaction to that? And, Ray, you're breaking up a little bit, so I'm going to put you on hold. Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, it depends on the situation. I have seen a lot of situations with tremendous games where people show up at the closing. I sold a house several years ago, George, and showed up at the closing, and they increased the mortgage insurance premium fee without any notice to the borrower by a multiple of 2 to 3 times, and he just caught it because he went through the documents carefully. It was pretty amazing. So
did he walk from the deal, or did he sign it?
Yeah, he walked from the deal. It busted the whole closing. And
Yeah.
But it was, you know, there were clearly serious games going on, and you know, and my fear is that the mortgage insurance has just added on another layer, which has been exploitive, particularly of the people who can least afford it.
Seth in Utah, west of the Rockies, sound off time, Seth.
Hi. You know, this is really just irritating that no one is listening to us. I mean, we put them in office to listen to the American people, but yet they don't.
I mean, he's absolutely right, Catherine. No one is listening. This is being done. The wool is being pulled right under. It gives us the appearance that it's a decision, that it has to be done. I think the fraud has already occurred, don't you? Way, way into this.
Right, but it's never too late. One of the things I would encourage people to do, there's a great movie George Clooney made called Syriana.
Yes.
And it shows the challenge that a governmental leader has to do the right thing by his people and the danger he and his family face if they do. And I think the question before us is, how can we as citizens get to the point where we can make it possible for business and governmental leaders to do the ethical thing literally without fearing for their lives or their career? So if we're going to get out of this pickle, we have to deal with how do we make it possible for people to do the right thing without taking heroic risk that they really can't afford to take.
Next up, Glenn in Salisbury, North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Sound off, Glenn.
How you doing?
We are well. Go.
Well, my thing is the NESRA Act. And, you know, the NESRA Act's supposed to take everything back to the way it was before the crash of 29. It's supposed to be backed by precious metals. It's supposed to abolish the IRS and the Federal Reserve. And it's supposed to zero the debt of every American in the country. And I want to know why nobody's talking about it. And I wanted to know if Catherine knew anything about the NESRA Act and why they're not implementing it.
Let's find out.
All right. Yeah, I've read the NESRA Act, and there are a lot of terrific ideas in it. So I apologize for not mentioning it.
Is it enforceable?
It would be enforceable if it was enacted into law. Of course, this gets back to how are you going to get the House of Representatives and the Senate to vote for it when it is not going to be financially great. It is an act that would help create the most wealth, but it would stop the continued centralization of wealth. So it goes the opposite direction of this bailout and most of the legislation and appropriations we've seen for the last decade.
Reuben in Louisiana, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
We're well.
I've listened for years. It's the first time I've called. I just had a comment, and then I got a question for Catherine. The $700 billion that the Senate just passed, okay, that's something totally different. George Bush signed a $630 billion spending bill on Tuesday for defense, education, farming, health.
Yeah, that's out of the budget. That's right.
That's the budget, and that's good till March of 2009. Now, the $700 billion is going to be on top of that.
Yep.
Okay, now, I think March of 2009, I think that's when the House of Cards is going to start coming down. I really do. Because it's going to be another president and a whole new term, and everything's going to have to be renewed then.
Catherine, go ahead.
I'm sorry. My question to Catherine is, how does one go about forming a private bank?
Oh, well, that...
that would have been for
Andy
Goss.
We could talk for days about that. One of the most important opportunities that we can take advantage of right now is to start to build more liquidity locally. And that's not just banks. That's you know, sharing a lot of different things, loans and equity. And I would really encourage everybody listening to this to start to look at how they can network with people they really know and trust well locally and start to talk about these things, because before the money can flow, there needs to be a lot more communication and intimacy on a local and network basis. Let me just say one thing about your earlier comment, because I lived through the cleanup of the last housing bubble bust in 88 and 89, and the dates are very important. What's going to happen is we're going to have an inauguration in January. The new president will walk into the Oval Office to discover he's essentially in a financial prison. And then we're going to face some very important dates in March, not just the budget dates that you talked about, but but investors are going to have to report their prior year results in March 15th, and we're going to have corporate tax dates and then individual tax dates on April 15th. And that's going to be a period of incredible pain, and then we go into sort of the normal summer slowdown. And that's normally in an economic recession when the housing recession starts, when you get the drop in housing from the drop in income and the sort of economic recession. So the last time around, the summer of 89 was the time that we were dealing with the most pain from digesting the drop in the bubble. And I think we're just at the beginning of the shakeout. And next summer, from March to next summer, is going to be the toughest period.
Let's go to Gina in Salina, California. Go ahead, Gina. Sound
Hi.
Off. Hi.
I think since McCain and Obama both are for this, I think everybody ought to call our congressman and tell him we're going to vote for Nader.
What do you think about that, Catherine?
You know, I think votes for third party right now, you know, whether we give money or votes for third party are very important. And I'll also say that something that's very important are your local elections. Because next year, where the rubber's going to meet the road on a lot of this is what your county and municipal officials are going to do in your communication with them. So there has never been a more important time to really care about, you know, who your sheriff is than next year. So I would really pay attention as well to your local elections. But I think money and votes for third-party candidates right now could send a very important message.
Bob in Las Vegas, sound off. Robert, go ahead.
Hey, George, first time, long time.
Thanks.
Catherine, my heroine, what an honor to speak with you. let me sound off. I'm a CEO of a software company that's directly related to preventing fraud and terrorism in the finance transaction market. When I tried to sell it to the software and its mechanism to the government, they shut the door on me politely. And then conveniently, several days later, someone or some entity was trying to penetrate my servers through the website by using a code red scan and a scrubber. Unfortunately for them, though, there was a tracer on my software that they were unaware of, and some interesting locations of the scan originated. And I recorded them, but I'm not going to say where they came from. Langley. Oops. No, I didn't say that. I tried to sell it to the major banks and credit card companies as well, at several different forums, face-to-face. And they told me that, specifically, if the Fed couldn't control it, they're not interested in preventing any type of fraud, identity theft, or terrorist hack attacks. So I was pretty disappointed, still trying to market it, but, you know, facing trouble. My question for Catherine is the movement of the dollars that came out of the Fed into the European banks, as well as the Canadian bank, in tranches of what 180, I think, two tranches, and then to reach a total of 800 B.
Uh-huh.
Do you see that as a maneuver to prevent some kind of a partnership between possibly Russia and Iran?
You know, that is an excellent question, and I think the most frustrating thing for myself and the other kind of people that George has had on the show tonight and others is trying to get good information on what's happening, because clearly most of the financial media is not giving us good information. We're dealing with organizations who we don't trust in the first place. They have a record of not giving good information. So there's clearly a game going on of economic warfare behind the scenes, which has much more to do with geopolitics and who's inside and who's outside and who's in control. And trying to make sense of it is very difficult in the short run. So what we know we're watching is the Americans, you know, all these financial institutions, both here and abroad, have been selling rotten paper, and now they're in the position of having to help each other get out of it and stabilize it. But there's also a geopolitical game going on behind the scenes, including the, you know, what's been happening with Russia and China. And China is a very important component of this. And so, you know, I believe intuitively that that's true, but just don't have the information to tell in the short run what the real game is.
Can I make a prediction, George?
You sure can, Bob.
I believe it's the strengthening and the scrutiny of the origination and destination of the foreign currency and the follow of that currency through the two is greater than one policy of the Illuminati as a test required by the families to provide or to prove viability of the maneuver. And then another currency, maybe called the Amero, can be ingratiated into the global market so that it strengthens the dollar or prior to the dollar so they can do a short run and perform in the same mechanism that they've been doing every time a new derivative is created under a different name, and this one, in my opinion, is called bailout.
I agree. Very well
said, George.
By the way. Very well said. Very informed listeners, Catherine.
Yes. Yes. What's amazing, they're one of the most respected money managers, Dodge & Cox, out in San Francisco, lost $1 billion on Fannie Mae, and then just lost $2.5 billion on Wachovia. And it's funny, when I saw the Wachovia announcement, I said, you know, if Dodge & Cox would just listen to Coast & Coast, you know, they would not have lost that $3.5 billion.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. Lorraine in Baltimore, sound off, Lorraine.
Real quickly, can't there be an injunction so that we don't lose those records? Like when a building falls, can't you stop it beforehand? It's unconstitutional, obviously.
How do you get the Department of Justice to move against Treasury when Treasury's got this legal construct?
Go directly to the Supreme Court. This is a once-in-a-lifetime.
You would have to have the Supreme Court move on this.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And the question is, how do you get them? Now, I'll tell you the one way I know how to get them to do it is literally if every American tomorrow woke up and said, we are pulling all of our money out, whether bank deposits or brokerage, of the institutions that are doing this, you know, who are big players in the bailout, and moving it to the institute, you know, to the banks and brokerage houses that have behaved in more ethical ways. You know, that kind of mass shift of money at the grassroots could have a tremendous shift in the balance of power.
Indeed. Catherine, thanks so much for being on Coast to Coast.
George, you're the best. Thank you so much.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.